Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. This is Kathy Frey from Motherwise. And I'm wanting to talk to you today about particularly around about that sort of 29 to 31 weeks of gestation. And what things should you be thinking about around that time, getting yourself educated on, etc. So I'm going to give you a bit of a list, a bit of a to-do list, and some of it we'll go over in a bit of detail as well. I'm going to refer to my list at the same time. I don't want to miss out anything. Okay, so a lot of different little random topics today. All right, so firstly, optimal positioning. And what that means is we're talking about you doing everything in your power to start to become aware of the lie of your position of your baby and what you can do to assist it. Now, in reality, until that baby is around sort of 34, 35, 36 weeks, they're going to be spinning all around the place. But at that stage, we really want them to start to be head down. So what would be good at this stage, because that's still really sort of a month away for you, is to at least start to get familiar with the term optimal positioning. And a really fantastic resource on that is a website called spinningbabies.com. So just go onto the website. It's all self-explanatory and you can start to get familiar with that. All right, another thing on your to-do list that you just want to make sure that you're on track for is what are you doing with regards to your own exercise during this pregnancy? So obviously there's been loads of research done on this topic over years, and sometimes the research is quite contradictory. And so that just adds to the general confusion, of course. But what I would say is the pretty absolutely kind of sound information that we know is that around about 150 minutes a week of moderate exercise that's spread out over 3 or 4 days, we know that doing that has phenomenal health benefits. I can tell you that I'm looking at my list: gestational diabetes, pregnancy-induced hypertension, preeclampsic toxemia, they all go down by around 40%. And here's the kicker: postnatal depression goes down by 70%. And that actually includes antenatal depression as well, which is rarer but does occur. So 150 minutes a week spread over 3 or 4 days of moderate exercise. Now, my personal favorites are preggy yoga, gentle walking, and gentle swimming. One thing I would say, and I know not everybody agrees, but a lot of other people do agree, stop doing your pelvic floor exercises, especially in that last trimester. You do not want a strong pelvic floor for birthing a baby. You want a soft, yielding pelvic floor. Trust me, yes, particularly all you Pilates gym junkies and horse riders. I've had multiple occasions over the years where these women dilate beautifully, but boy, do they have some problems pushing the baby out because their pelvic floor is so strong, it's just not yielding. So I would like you to have, I think most midwives would like you to have a very soft yielding pelvic floor by the time that you are going to be giving birth. Then afterwards, go for it with your Kegels exercises and strengthen back up that pelvic floor. But so anyway, another topic to hit too. As I say, we're doing some random things today here. I want you to be aware of the breastfeeding benefits or benefits of breastfeeding. Now, I'm just going to refer to my own book because, again, I don't want to miss anything. But look, just to, you know, give you some of the information around that, because exclusive, fully breastfed babies just do so much better health-wise as infants and as children, and as we know now, into adulthood as well. So 20 to 40% reductions in infant gastroenteritis, 50 to 80% reduction in infant diarrhea, 25 to 75% reduction in infant otitis media, which is middle ear infections, 50 to 70% reduction in childhood asthma and wheezing, 20 to 60% reduction in childhood atopy, which is an inherited disease, and anyway, it's complicated. 15 to 50% reduction in childhood acute respiratory infections, 35 to, so that's like your bronchitis, etc. 35 to 40% reduction in infant urinary tract infections, 40% reduction in childhood celiac disease, 5 to 8% higher IQ. Yeah, that's not enough to motivate fully exclusive breastfeeding. 30 to 70% reduction in childhood obesity, 5 to 30% reduction of childhood type 1 diabetes. What else have we got? Oh, 20 to 30% reduction of childhood cancers such as leukemia. Look, honestly, the list just goes on and on and on. But so you need to be aware of it, because once you start breastfeeding, it's not necessarily easy for most women. It's quite a task to get to that point when we've got that 1 month, 2 month old baby that we can just discreetly and effectively and efficiently breastfeed in a coffee shop without anybody even noticing. Yeah, that does not happen in the first month. And so you need to be fully committed to breastfeeding. And all of that information is what you need on board to be able to really commit to it so that you'll persist at it. Because honestly, from a lot of us, it was so hard. You kind of, these days when you just want to give up. So you want to have all that information on board. Now, let me look at my little list. Okay. If you have high risk for gestational diabetes, or you're showing signs of potential diabetes, like maybe there's a lot of water around your baby, or the baby's quite large for its gestation, then you'd have a repeat GTT test, glucose tolerance test, usually at around 32 weeks to make sure that you haven't become diabetic temporarily in your pregnancy. Also, around this time is a good period for you to be getting booked in to see an obstetrician if you haven't yet. If you have any pre-existing non-acute conditions, obviously if there's anything acute going on, you would have been seen by an obstetrician by now. But if there's something more chronic, and your midwife would guide you through that if you've got midwifery care as your primary care provider. If you have any kind of complications potentially for a spinal or general anesthesia, this is a very good time to be touching base with an anaesthetist who would do an assessment on you. So say, for example, if you have scoliosis in your back, or you've had previous back surgeries, or you've had previous anesthetic complications, it's just much better, I think, for them to be able to just have a consult with you and have that all documented down in the hospital records before you're in the middle of having strong contractions and they're dealing with an emergency and they're trying to get a history on your anesthetic risk factors. So that's quite a good thing. And also women who have a high BMI, that's another important reason, I think, to have an anesthesiac consult as well. Okay, you want to be starting to au fait yourself with general fourth trimester experiences for a baby. So, you know, the human babies of all mammals are born as some of the most helpless, and we have the longest time to become an adult. So understanding that really, there are theories that our babies used to, sort of prehistoric days, be born more capable than they are now. But with the growth of the size of the brain, we needed to deliver our babies a little bit more helpless these days in modern humankind. So it's good for you to start to treat that first couple of months. A lot of cultures around the world talk of the first 100 days. So that's actually even a better way to look at it. The first 100 days after your baby is born needs to really be thought of as the fourth trimester. So if you imagine that that baby was still inside you and growing in a very non-stimulating environment where they're not going to get overtired because they're not going to get overstimulated, they're having all the food they need, all the rest they need, a constant even temperature that they're dealing with, you know, so I wouldn't be taking your baby out and about and until they are well and truly over 5 weeks of age and over 5 kilos. But actually 100 days at home is even better for a baby. So bearing in mind that you, when you are breastfeeding your baby, you're providing that baby with antibodies for all of the germs that are naturally in your environment at home. But when you take that baby out of the home environment and it's starting and or it's getting handled by people who don't live in that home environment, then it's going to be getting exposure to germs that you're not providing antibodies for. So that's why babies just get more sick, and that's why so many cultures around the planet before the days of antibiotics and modern hospitalization always kept those babies in isolation for 100 days, and the mothers as well, because they too are vulnerable to still getting sick. So that's a good strategy, absolutely. Now, other things, what are some of the sort of tests and things that occur immediately after having a baby, and why are they done? I think that's an interesting topic. So one of the things that you'll hear about is the APGAR score that's done on a baby, and that's when the baby is 1 minute old and 5 minutes old. And by the way, as midwives, we just do it by visual observation generally, unless that baby is on the resuscitator because they're in respiratory distress and needing some extra assistance, which about 1 in 10 can. So it's not that uncommon, but in general terms, you don't even know that the midwife is doing that APGAR assessment. But the APGAR stands for appearance, pulse, grimacing, activity and respiration. So we give the baby a 0, 1, or 2 score on each of those. And so that means their optimum score is 10. And in general terms, the commonest score is usually around about a 7 when they, 7 or 8, when they, sometimes a 9, actually, yeah, particularly for naturally born babies without any complications. So let's say 7, 8, or 9 is an absolutely wonderful score at 1 minute old. And then we really want really an 8, 9, or 10, preferably a 10, 9 or 10, preferably a 10 by the time they're 5 minutes of age. But some will always still be a 9, and that's still okay. But when we have a baby that's got an APGAR score of 6 or less at a minute old, then that is a baby that's needing attention, and the midwives are well aware of that, and they are doing what they need to do. So really, the APGAR score is not so much informing the midwife, oh, look, the APGAR score is this, you need to do attention. No, that's not how it works. It's more we well and truly know that that baby needs attention, but for the sake of kind of clinical records of the progress of that baby. So, and sometimes we will continue to do APGAR scores. So if the baby is still sitting at about a 7 at 5 minutes of age, then we might do another one 5 minutes later, 5 minutes later, 5 minutes later. So we can see on a record that, you know, yes, the baby was pinking up. Yes, their respiration distress was reducing. Yes, their pulse was getting more steady. So it's just a bit of a medical record. Yeah. Okay. Now, what else? And with you, the things that are done, the most important thing that's sort of is being monitored with you immediately after your baby is born is your bleeding. So yes, we're looking at the baby at the same time, but also we're wanting to know what's going on with your bleeding, because until you have an empty, contracted womb, you do have a risk of hemorrhaging. And even with an empty contracted womb, you could be hemorrhaging or bleeding a little bit from something else. So maybe there's a tear in the cervix, maybe it's a perineal tear. So control of bleeding the delivery of the placenta and the membranes and control of bleeding all needs to occur fairly expediently after that baby is born. Well, hold on, I'll backtrack that. With a spontaneous natural labor and a spontaneous natural birth, there's and no active hemorrhaging. Well, there's no particular urgency for that placenta to be delivered. And sometime within the next hour, oftentimes after the baby starts to feed, then the woman will spontaneously birth the placenta. But basically, until that placenta is born, there's a real vigilant monitoring of what's going on with your bleeding. And after the placenta is born, that still occurs as well. So, you know, particularly over those first hours and whatnot, the midwives and or the maternity nurses will be asking you what's happening with your bleeding, how often are you changing your pad, you know, so we want to keep a really good eye on that. Other things that will be checked on you is your blood pressure. That's all, you know, normotensive and back to what it should be. There are risk factors for women having high blood pressure after having their baby, so that's always something that we look out for. And also we want to know that you have weed. Yes, we want to know that you have passed urine, and but it just basically tells us that your bladder is all happy, especially if you've had a cesarean section. So that becomes very important that they know that you've urinated, although straight after a cesarean section, you'll have a catheter in your urethra for emptying your bladder. So that will be done sort of 24 hours later is when they'll be wanting to know that you're weeing yourself. But sometimes, you know, we are pushing a baby's head and body and shoulders and everything all past your bladder. So we just want to make sure your bladder's happy, really. And it's sometimes that they can be kind of a little traumatized, a little bruised. And yeah, and it can take a few days to just sort of settle down and make you feel like your weeing is all kind of back to normal. Okay, what else do we have on our little list I want to talk to you about? All right, so you want to know... Oh, here we go. Maternity bras. This is a really good time for you to start to purchase or a maternity, start to think about getting your maternity bras, because your breasts have already gone through, if this is a first pregnancy, your breasts will have already gone through mammogenesis 2, which is what happens when they get larger when you become pregnant the first time. And because when you grow your breasts in puberty, that's only stage 1 of growing breasts, and stage 2 occurs when you are pregnant for the first time. But you are, those breasts are going to get even bigger, like sometimes substantially bigger, after the milk comes in, depending on engorgement and how that kind of goes for you. And I remember myself looking at my own incredibly enormous engorged boobs thinking, oh my gosh, I could never have imagined them looking like that. So yeah, they got it, but then they settle back down after engorgement. So you want to be thinking about making sure you've got some really good maternity bras, and I would also get some soft ones that you can wear at night in bed, because it's really normal that you leak. You need to put some breast pads inside your bra. So get sort of like a t-shirt material, kind of softer bra for wearing at night when you're sleeping, because otherwise you just keep waking up with wet tops and wet sheets, and that's not very pleasant. And also, there's the most fantastic array these days of lactation tops, you know, shirts and tops and t-shirts and things that you can buy, which are really cool and trendy and allow for easy access to those breasts with your baby for breastfeeding. So just start to get that sort of stuff sorted and out of the way. And I want you to be aware of the signs and symptoms of an unwell baby or well baby. So I'm just going to, again, go back to my book, because I don't want to miss anything, is just go over some of this with you. All right. So as far as a symptoms of a well baby go, as long as your baby is having, say, around about 8 breastfeeds every 24 hours, probably not much less than that, or sometimes more than that, but, and they're doing sort of, say, between 8 to 10 to 12 wees a day, and they're putting on, and after they are sort of day 10 to 14. So it's very normal for babies to lose some weight at the beginning and as the milk comes in. And but really by sort of day 10 to 14, they should be back to their birth weight. And at that point, they should be putting on a nice sort of 200 or 300 grams a week. And if they are doing, you know, only 100 grams a week or 500, half a kilo a month, that's really borderline. Those babies are probably only doing 7 or 8 wees a day or even less. So as long as your baby is doing loads and loads of wees, all right, it does not matter how frequently or infrequently they poo, as long as they're doing lots and lots of wees. Fully breastfed babies sometimes only poo once a week, and that's absolutely fine. Not okay with formula fed babies, but that's absolutely fine with breastfed babies. Now, in the very early days, when they're just a couple of days old, we do want to know that they've had a first bowel movement within that time, because we just want to know their bowels are open, basically, that they're patent. But after that, as long as we're starting to get some nice bright yellow poo by the time they're sort of about 5 days old or so, mustard coloured, pawpaw coloured poo, that's all good. And then after that, as long as there's loads of wet nappies, it doesn't matter how frequently or infrequently they poo. All right, so about red flags that your baby might actually be unwell. Okay, there is a significantly longer list than I'm just about to give you in my book, which I want to hold up and show you. So that's it there. That whole page is a massive list of all the things that you want to know are symptoms that your baby is unwell. But to give that to you as an overview, all right, so if you have a prolonged cry that sounds really whiny and nasal and low-pitched, there's a healthy, vigorous cry in a baby, and there's a sick, unwell cry for a baby. And it tends to be weak. You know, if your baby's, well, that's vigorous, right? But it's, it's a weak cry. So that's a little bit of, it's not saying there's something wrong. It's saying it's a red flag. And these are things you watch out for. If the baby's temperature is over 38 degrees, it shouldn't be. But at the same time, what you don't want to do is completely undress them and strip them down to nothingness within a few short minutes, because they can actually get cold stressed from that sudden change. So you want to sort of take some layers off and just make sure you haven't just really overdressed them. If they are vomiting, now it's absolutely normal for babies to do positing, which is bleh, like a barfy burp that just runs down their chin. And some babies do projectile vomits, which is a sign of reflux. But both of those are different. We are talking about actual vomiting, like an unwellness. And yes, and often goes together with diarrhea. So the poos, and that's a hard thing to pick on babies, let's face it, because babies' poo is runny anyway. But better to be thinking that maybe there's wrong than thinking something's right when it's not. Seizures, obviously, is an issue. But actually, seizures in babies, in general terms, cause no long-term issues at all. But what I would say is that if your baby's having a seizure fitting, then get an ambulance, because it's probably not a good idea for you to be driving, okay? Because you will be freaked out, and we don't want you having an accident, because it's hard to focus on the road. So just call an ambulance. If the baby's incredibly limp, like just, you know, I mean, there's just no energy in the baby. If they have a rash, especially if you get a glass tumbler, a drinking glass, and you push it onto that rash, and the rash does not disappear, okay, that's a sign of septicemia, which is incredibly, incredibly serious. So if you get a glass that you can drink out of, push it onto a rash, if it bleaches, that's okay. Still get a medical opinion, but it's not an emergency. But if you put it on and it does not, bleach and it stays red, get that baby to a hospital as soon as possible. Pale or blue tinged skin and sort of feeling cold to the touch. Now, it's really common with a brand new baby that they can have a bit of bluish hands, bluish feet as their circulation gets sort of sorted, really. But if you ever see a baby with bluish lips or a baby who was pink who's becoming blue or white, that's not okay. Coughing? I mean, the occasional... No, I'm just talking about actual chronic coughing. And wheezing breathing, you know, where they've gone from absolutely fine to wheezing. It's those changes is what you're looking for. And hitting or pulling at their ears, that tends to be in older babies. Younger babies can't do that so well. They don't have coordination of their arms in that way. But they might sort of bang their limbs on their ears because they might have an earache. And if they are attempting but then refusing feed. So they're hungry, but then it's they can't drink it, and that could be a sign of like tonsillitis or another complexity. So that is everything we're going over today. Lots more information in the book, obviously, Oh Baby. But I wanted you to have that really good sort of overview of things to be thinking about at this gestation in your pregnancy. And we'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com